So today we are starting the first canto. It's a very auspicious day. And on top of that, it's Ekadasi. Makes it even more auspicious. So somehow I've ended up here. I was not meant to give the class, but I just found out, so I haven't really prepared. And I don't think I can do justice to the very first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But anyway, I'm going to try. So please bear with me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Janmadi Asya Yato Anvayat Itaratas Chatheshav Abhigya Svarat.
Janmadi Asya Yato Anvayat
Tene Brahma Hidaya Adikave Muyanti Yatsurayaha. Tejo vari vidam yatha vinimayo yatrati sargo amrisha. Dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam parandhi mahi. So I'll just read the translation and the purport otherwise. If you repeat the translation, it'll take a long time. I think it will be time to finish the class. So I'll read part of the purport of this purport by Srila Prabhupada, verse 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 pages. So maybe I'll read 2 to 4 paragraphs, and then whoever's giving class tomorrow, actually it's my name, but I'm not sure I'll be doing it. So whoever's giving tomorrow, they can read further.
But 3 months.
Yeah, that was one of my points of the class. You're giving out the points. Okay. O my Lord, Shri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Shri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes, of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. And he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Shri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Purport. Obeisances under the personality of Godhead, Vasudev, directly indicate Lord Shri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. This fact will be more explicitly explained in the text of this work. Shri Vyasadeva asserts herein that Shri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all others are his direct or indirect plenary portions or portions of the portion. Srila Jiva Goswami has even more explicitly explained the subject matter in his Krishna Sandarbha. And Brahma, the original living being, has explained the subject of Shri Krishna substantially in his treatise named Brahma Samhita. In the Sama Veda Upanishad, it is also stated that Lord Shri Krishna is the divine son of Devaki. Therefore, in this prayer, the first proposition holds that Lord Shri Krishna is the primeval Lord, and if any transcendental nomenclature is to be understood as belonging to the absolute personality of Godhead, it must be the name indicated by the word Krishna, which means all attractive. In Bhagavad Gita, in many places, the Lord asserts himself to be the original personality of Godhead, and this is confirmed by Arjuna and also by great sages like Narad, Vyas and many others. In the Padma Purana, it is also stated that out of the innumerable names of the Lord, the name of Krishna is the principal one. Vasudev indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, and all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudev are indicated in this text. The name Vasudev particularly indicates the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. Shri Krishna is always meditated upon by the Paramahamsas, who are the perfected ones among those in the renounced order of life. Vasudev or Lord Shri Krishna is the cause of all causes. Everything that exists emanates from the Lord. How this is so is explained in later chapters of this work. This Purana is described by Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya as a spotless Purana because it contains a transcendental narration of the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna. The history of the Srimad Bhagavatam is also very glorious. It was compiled by Sri Vyasadev after he had attained maturity in transcendental knowledge. He wrote this under the instructions of Sri Naradji, his spiritual master. Vyasadev compiled all Vedic literatures containing the four divisions of the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutras or the Brahma Sutras, the Puranas, the Mahabharata and so on. But nevertheless, he was not satisfied. His dissatisfaction was observed by his spiritual master, and thus Narada advised him to write on the transcendental activities of Lord Shri Krishna. These transcendental activities are described specifically in the 10th canto of this work. But in order to reach to the very substance, one must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories. It is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. At night he sees the stars in the sky and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants. Such inquiries are natural for man because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. He says that the Lord Shri Krishna is the origin of all creations. He is not only the creator of the universe but the destroyer as well. The manifested cosmic nature is created at a certain period by the will of the Lord. It is maintained for some time and then it is annihilated by His will. Therefore, the supreme will is behind all cosmic activities. Of course, there are atheists of various categories who do not believe in a creator, but that is due to a poor fund of knowledge. The modern scientist, for example, has created space satellites, and by some arrangement or other, these satellites are thrown into outer space to fly for some time at the control of the scientist who is far away. Similarly, all the universes with innumerable stars and planets are controlled by the intelligence of the personality of Godhead. So I'll read one more paragraph. This is also about inquiry. In Vedic literatures, it is said that the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, is the chief amongst all living personalities. All living beings, beginning from the first created being Brahma, down to the smallest ant, are individual living beings. And above Brahma, there are even other living beings with individual capacities. And the personality of Godhead is also a similar living being. And he is an individual as are the other living beings. But the Supreme Lord or the Supreme Living Being has the greatest intelligence. And he possesses supermost inconceivable energies of all different varieties. If a man's brain can produce a space satellite, one can very easily imagine how brains higher than man can produce similar wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument, but there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Srila Vyasadeva, however, at once accepts the Supreme Intelligence as Parameshwar. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Intelligence addressed as the Para or the Parameshwar or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Parameshwar is Shri Krishna, as admitted in Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Shri Vyasadeva, and specifically in this Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord Himself says that there is no other Paratattva, Samam Bhonam, other than Himself. Therefore, Shri Vyasadeva at once worships the Paratattva, Shri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shlakya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So today we are starting the Srimad Bhagavatam, the very first verse of the first chapter of the first canto. So maybe after 20 years or so, or whatever, long period of time, we are again beginning to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam. And as is mentioned in the verses which are yet to come in the future chapters, that Srimad Bhagavatam is to be recited every day. It's Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So, because by recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, one can achieve the highest goal of life, which is to develop Krishna Prema. And Srimad Bhagavatam lifts one, has the potency to lift one from the lowest condition of life. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the Paramahamsas. As in the next verse, we'll read that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana, which is specifically meant for the Paramahamsas, those who are free from envy. But not only for them, but even those who are caught up in the modes of nature, Srimad Bhagavatam can pick one from the lowest mode of nature, the mode of ignorance, and raise one to the platform of Vishuddha Sattva or pure goodness. So that is the potency of Srimad Bhagavatam. And with the start of any Vedic text or any literature, we see in the beginning there is Mangalacharanam, which means Mangalacharanam basically has three aspects. One is it invokes auspiciousness. Number two, the author offers obeisances. And number three, it offers benedictions. So with the Vedic literatures, at least we see there is, all these literatures start with Mangalacharanam. So the modern literature is not like that. They start writing this from, you know, page one. Maybe they'll show their gratitude to the family or to whoever helped in compiling that book. But in Vedic texts we see they actually invoke blessings and auspiciousness of the Lord. And they offer obeisances and give benedictions. So whoever reads this text. So here we see the verse starts off with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So means Namaha means offering my obeisances, Bhagavate unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudevaya unto Vasudev, the son of Vasudev or Lord Shri Krishna, the primeval Lord. So here this text is beginning by the author, who here is Vyasadev. Here this text is being spoken by Vyasadev, and he is offering obeisances to Vasudev. So Vasudev means the son of Vasudev and Devaki. So like that, Krishna has many names. One of Krishna's names is Devaki Nandana, the son of Devaki. Or Partha Sarathi, one who drives the chariot of Arjuna. So like that, Krishna actually derives more pleasure when he is addressed in relationship to his devotees, because his devotees are very dear to him. So here we read that, O my Lord Shri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So here, obeisances are being offered by Vyasadeva, and as Mahaprabhu was mentioning, that because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he actually spoke on this verse for 3 months in Dhaka. And I was just reading, I was hearing a lecture on this verse by Prabhupada a while ago, and Prabhupada was saying that every verse we can speak for 7 months. Every verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because every verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam is imbued with Krishna Prem. So the acharyas are those who are very qualified, very advanced devotees. They can speak on the same verse for months and months, and they can present different angles and still bring out the conclusion, which is surrender to Krishna. So, but they do not run out of steam. So I'll just try to expand on the purport. So as here it's mentioned that here, particularly in this text, Vyasadeva is offering obeisances to Vasudev, and in particular to Krishna, as we know from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsa, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, Indrari
Vyakulam Lokam Nidhayanti Yuge Yuge. Nidhayanti Yuge Yuge. So that it is described that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and from Krishna come all the other incarnations. So we know from Krishna comes Balaram and so on and so forth, it expands. So from Krishna comes the plenary portions, and from those plenary portions come other plenary portions. And that Krishna is actually the source of all of them. And as it's mentioned here that I meditate upon Lord Shri Krishna because He is the absolute truth and the primeval causes of all causes of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the manifested universes. And He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and He is independent. And He is independent because there is no other cause beyond Him. It is He only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji. So we see that at the time of creation, when Krishna in the form of Mahavishnu, He glanced upon the material nature, and thereby all these universes came about from His pose, and then He entered into each of them as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu emanated this stem from His lotus-like navel. And on top of the stem was Lord Brahma. So when Brahma was there, there was no other living entity. Brahma was there by Himself. And He was perplexed and bewildered. And He tried to inquire into why He is there. Into the cause of His creation. He wanted to inquire into His, why am I here, what am I doing here? And therefore He had a look around, He couldn't see anything, everything is dark. So He went down the stem, went in the Garbhodak ocean, but still He could not find the source. So actually that also applies to us, that actually the human form of life is meant for inquiry. Athato Brahma Jigyasa. So the reason we get this human form of life is to inquire into the nature of ourselves. And that, in other words, what is identity, who we are, where are we coming from, and what is our relationship with the source of everything. So, but this inquiry is, we see everyone is inquiring. These questions and answers are going on all the time. Inquiry means questions. So, actually in all species of life, questions are going on. If we analyze even a conversation is nothing but a question and an answer. Any conversation you take. So it is nothing but so these questions and answers are going in all species of life, from birds to aquatics to ants, or even we see in politics, sociology, economics, all fields, questions and answers are going on. But these kinds of questions and answers are not ultimately leading anywhere, because they are all in relationship to the body. But it is described that one is truly intelligent when they begin to inquire into the nature of the self. That's when one's real intelligence kicks off. Till that point, one is not really intelligent. So you can go to universities, big universities. What's going on? Nothing but questions and answers in all the departments. The students are questioning, sometimes the teachers are questioning the students. So, and these questions and answers are going on, but despite so many questions and answers, they are not able to ascertain what is the identity, what is the real identity. And because of this misconception, of identity, the entire civilization is based on the wrong platform. And the result, they're creating so many problems for themselves and on a individual and on a collective level. So, but here, here it is described that the nature of inquiries is described. So, by reading Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, we actually learn how to inquire. So, here we see the highest inquiry being placed. Here, if we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll see how Maharaj Parikshit, he inquires into the nature of the Absolute Truth. He inquires into the nature of the Self. And it's also described that Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. And it is specifically declared by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that how Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana.
You see, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was a baby, and he would cry a lot, and his mother would try to pacify him. Everyone would try to pacify him, but he would not be pacified. He would keep crying and crying and crying. And till they would chant the holy names of the Lord, then he would be pacified. So by this he actually indicated his mission. And later also we see, I think in India back then it was a system, they, in order to judge the tendencies of the child, so once they put in front of the child, in front of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Srimad Bhagavatam on one side, and on the other side they had wealth or gold coins or something. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu picked up the Srimad Bhagavatam. So by that he indicated his mission and how Srimad Bhagavatam is very dear to him, and that it is actually the spotless Purana. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana because it describes nothing but the personality of Godhead in relationship to his devotees. So we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually all the Vedas are emanations from the breath of the Supreme Lord. We said the Vedas emanate from the breathing of the Lord. So the Vedic literatures are actually perfect. They are beyond the four defects. But in most of the Vedic texts, the glories of the Lord are not directly enunciated. So if you read Vedanta Sutra, it is all in aphorisms or codes. And the glories of the Lord are there, but they are there in an indirect manner. Or even if you take the Mahabharata, there also you can read about Krishna and his devotees, but not so much. But whereas we see the Srimad Bhagavatam, in its summit in the 10th canto, is nothing but the glories of the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So all the other 9 cantos ultimately lead to Krishna's smiling face. So the first canto is described as Krishna's lotus feet. So as one progresses through all the 9 cantos, one becomes qualified to read the pastimes of the Lord in the 10th canto. Because the 10th canto are nothing but the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in order to appreciate them, one has to have an understanding of the Absolute Truth, what the Absolute Truth means. So here is described how that Absolute Truth is the Param Satyam or the Samam Bonam. So generally, the people's conception of God means controller, as is described in the introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam. That the conception people have of God is that He is the controller. So obviously, control implies a person. But we see everyone is a controller in this world to some extent. But Krishna is called the Absolute Truth or the source of all energies. So it is described as the demigods are also controllers, but they get the opportunity to control or the empowerment to control from the Supreme Lord. And that Krishna is the source of the demigods also. So therefore Krishna is called the Param Satyam or the Absolute Truth, the source of everything and the source of all energies. And control therefore implies that there is a person behind that. It is not... Prabhupada gives the example of a democracy. He says that a democracy to some extent is impersonal, but still behind the democracy government there is a person there. A person, an executive person who is in charge. So similarly, behind all this control ultimately is the hand of the Lord, Sri Krishna. And he is addressed as the Param Satyam. And so therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is very glorious because it propounds it not only propounds, we see so many religions of the world describe God in a very crude sense. So how is the creator, maintainer and controller like that. Or they might describe some aspect of God, but Srimad Bhagavatam describes the personality of Godhead, the personality of Krishna. And not only that, it also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it's the Srimad Bhagavatam is a spotless Purana because it describes that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Vrindavan is his abode. And that the highest method of worshipping Krishna
is that of the gopis. So therefore Srimad Bhagavatam propounds the highest truth.
And as is described in the third paragraph, that it is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. So therefore, of course all species of life inquire, but especially in the human form of life, in the human form of life we make the most inquiries. And we see that man wants to know about the source of his creation. So there's so much research going on in universities and other institutions. They're making so much research into our cause. How did we come about on this planet? So as here says, at night he sees the stars in the sky and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants. Such inquiries are natural for man because man has a developed consciousness. So because we have this highly developed consciousness, therefore we want to inquire. So this inquiry is very natural for us. But the problem is, in today's society, the inquiry is primarily based on pratyaksha praman. In other words, based on the ability of their senses, or whatever information they acquire from the senses, then they speculate on that. So it is all based on speculation and direct sense perception. But they do not accept an authority from where they can understand the Vedic truth. Because it's actually not possible to find out about the source of everything. It's just not possible. By our own attempts, it's not possible. Or by empiric knowledge, or by our senses, it's not possible because our senses are defective and we have the four defects. So even in order to find out about the source of everything, they have to accept the Vedic literature. And why to accept the Vedic literature? Because the Vedic literature is free from four defects. So in any case, we have to accept an authority. Without accepting an authority, we cannot find out about the source of the creation, about our existence. So most people in the world, they accept the scientist as the authority. So they place their faith in the scientist, and whatever they say, they just accept it on blind faith. But they cannot verify whatever they're saying. And most of it is just theories and speculations. So even what is presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam, like, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam gives the description of the structure of the universe, we cannot verify that. So we also have to accept that on faith. But when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedic texts, we see that they are absolute. In other words, they're not relative. They don't change all the time. Whereas modern scientific theories are changing all the time. So when I was in school, in our textbook they taught us there are 10 planets. But after a while, you know, then the textbooks are edited and then another planet is added. So that indicates that the knowledge is not perfect, because they're always discovering more and more things. And even the things they've discovered sometimes, that is also not correct, what they're giving, the knowledge they're giving. So that also changes. But whatever is stated in the Vedic literature is absolute. Whatever is there, it is not changed. So the truth remains always. So we see whether from the mundane things the Vedic literature is described, from astrology to astronomy to medical science, everything is perfect. And then when it describes about the structure of the universe, about the absolute truth, it's all perfect. So the question is, we have to choose which kind of authority we accept. So we have to scrutinizingly, you know, study both authorities and see how that the material authorities are defective, whereas the supreme authority is perfect. And therefore the knowledge given by the supreme authority is also perfect. So I'll just stop here and see any questions, comments.
A few people told me that when I was out in New
What should be our attitude in relationship to the reading of these books?
Yes. Does it change
their consciousness? Okay. When we find out someone is reading these books, we should actually just encourage them. So we shouldn't put them down. We should encourage them that, you know, they're eager to know the truth and they want to find out. But we should actually encourage them to read along with that, just keep reading that, and along with that start reading the Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence of all the Vedas. So, but other point is that they don't really make much advancement by reading that, because first of all, there are not many bona fide translations of the Rig Veda. Actually, most of the Rig Veda is lost, so whatever is left, that is also, you know, there's no bona fide commentary. So whatever they're reading, they're not getting any benefit. And they're not even coming in the parampara. So this knowledge has to come through the parampara. So they don't have a guru. So it's actually basically a waste of time. And many a time we see people are reading all these, you know, the Sandarbhas or the Goswamis. But they many of the professors, they're discussing the such Sandarbhas in a bar and having a glass of beer. So, but people are not willing to change their personal life in order to understand this knowledge. So, you know, most people, they just want to maybe find out something higher, or they're fascinated by, you know, Eastern philosophy, therefore they start reading these books. So, best not to discourage them, just encourage them and get them to also start reading Bhagavad Gita. So, should glorify the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, how it's the essence of all Vedic literature. Very concise, 700 verses, everything is there, what they need to know. Encourage them like that. Yes, Margaret. Yeah, that's a good point. As mentioned later also, that the Vedas are usually studied by Brahmanas, because you need to be in the mode of goodness and you need a certain qualification in order to understand that. So people in this day and age, they are in the modes of passion and ignorance, so there is no way they can understand it. But we can, if they are reading, just encourage them and get them to read Srila Prabhupada's books. So you can say this is by a bona fide guru who has, by his mature wisdom, he has translated all these books. So you, along with that, read this also. But if you say stop reading that, then they might not even read Prabhupada's books.
Yes, Prabhu.
Question is that in the beginning you said it takes, we are starting Bhagavad Gita 1.1.1.
Bhagavatam.
1.1.1 after 20 years.
Something like that. That's what I've heard from devotees, yeah.
But I've been in Australia for 5 years. Mm-hmm. That feels a long time.
Yeah.
And does it take 20 years to finish Bhagavatam?
If you read privately on your own, you can finish it much faster. Every day if you read 1-2 hours or whatever, you can go through quite a few texts. But if we study verse by verse, we're talking about 20 or so whatever years here in this class. So every day we read one verse and we study the translation and the purport.
So if this starts like we are starting today, which is on 27th 2011,
yeah,
will it finish on 2021 or 2022, after 20 years?
Something like that, whatever time it takes. We go verse by verse. Srila Prabhupada said that we have to study the Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore every day study it in the morning verse by verse.
Yeah. And the comment would be, when you were saying that you found in books, there were 10 planets and all of a sudden there was another one, a new one?
In the mundane textbooks, yeah.
Yes. And in that text, I read somewhere that Albert Einstein said there are two things indefinite in this universe. Universe itself and man's stupidity.
Man's stupidity and universe. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned 4 defects. Do you want to elaborate on those 4 defects?
The 4 defects of a conditioned soul.
Yeah.
So it's the propensity to commit mistakes. You know, to err is human. We all make mistakes. So that's number 1. Number 2. Tendency to be illusioned. So accept that which is not. So to accept something as unreal as reality. Or for example, you accept a rope as a snake, or a snake as a rope. That is illusion. And number 3, defective senses. Our senses are defective. So, you know, we are wearing spectacles. Some people have hearing aids. So like that, we can see our senses are not perfect. What's the 4th one? Defective. Cheating propensity. So yeah, you know, we have this propensity to cheat. We don't know the perfect knowledge, but we still want to teach the imperfect knowledge. So that's... So because we have these 4 defects, therefore we cannot put forward any perfect knowledge. So the scientists who are putting forward knowledge, it is not perfect. They are actually cheating human society. Yes, Prabhu.
Regards to what you were saying before about letting people read the Bhagavad Gita on their own, but if I'm reading this somewhere and someone comes up and says, what are you reading? Is it okay to engage in discourse with that, or do I just say, oh, it's just on study Krishna consciousness, it's something you might want to try, am I supposed to limit it, or?
It depends. Who do you mean? Who's asking you?
Complete stranger.
Stranger. You can tell him you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam and explain Srimad Bhagavatam in a way he can understand.
Yeah, I can either wait. I mean, if I can correlate it to my life experience, can I do that?
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, that's not his impression. If I'm not qualified.
Well, one of the offenses is to preach to the faithless. One of the offenses of the holy name. Faithless means those who don't have any faith in Krishna and the process of devotional service. So, the person who maybe approaches you might be faithless, but we have to be expert in telling them what they can handle, what they can take. So we have to judge what level of faith they have and speak on that level. So, you know, if you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, you don't start telling them how Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill or he was dancing with the gopis, because they will not be able to appreciate that. So we see when Srila Prabhupada, he was speaking to so many people, even many prominent people, he would just speak about how we are not the body, we are the soul. So you have to speak according to their level, what they can understand. So the same Srimad Bhagavatam you can present in a way that they can understand. Yes, Prabhu.
I've been thinking I've got a question. The 4 months of fasting which we do leading up to Kartik, like spinach, yogurt, milk, papadums.
Yeah.
Like, if we don't follow that, is it like considered like sinful in the same way that not following the codicil is sinful?
Is it considered sinful to not follow the Chaturmasya? I'm not sure. I don't want to speculate. Yeah.
It is not. It's not sinful. It is actually helpful for your devotional service. So there's a lot of things which is recommended that can help you in your devotional service. But if you don't do it, it's not harmful. Ekadasi is something that is highly recommended. Because if you don't do Ekadasi, whatever you eat on that day, you are eating actually sin. So it's very highly recommended that we do Ekadasi, but it's very good to follow those things because those things help you with your spiritual life.
So like we see
so many things that we do, you know, which is recommended, you have to do this, you have to do this, you can do this, but you don't have to do all those things. Just like there is so many rules of how to do deity worship and things like that, you know. But if you don't do one of those, it's no big deal. But if you do it, it's very nice.
Thank you.
Ekadasi is an anga of bhakti. It's there in nectar of devotion. And so, whatever we are actually following, basically, Prabhupada has taken these principles from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And these are all, you know, items of bhakti which help us achieve our dormant Krishna consciousness. So, Prabhupada has actually made it very easy for us. He's giving us the essence of everything. So, he has condensed all the rules and regulations and just given us a few. But if we really want to get into rules and regulations, you know, we can't even enter the door. They're so technical and there's so many. They're very complicated. So deity worship has also been very much simplified. So Prabhupada has given us a very simple version. And specifically we see when Srila Prabhupada was establishing the Krishna consciousness movement in the early days, I think they were just saying, you know, oh Lord, wake up, like that, you know. So because they could not, if he gave them all the rules and regulations, you know, he said you would faint. So, you know, so even that time Prabhupada had made, according to the time, place and circumstance, he gave them what was required. So for now, he has given us these principles which are there in the nectar of devotion, and that he is, that's just like what we need to follow. That's for us.
Did he even describe when they had a break of fast? I think John Master knew had a break of fast for.
Yeah.
So it's a codicil fast.
Yeah.
It was in the JTM channel.
What Srila Prabhupada and glorification of holy name. That how to change the holy name. That is the main emphasis that he went overseas to give the whole world.
Yeah.
And one more question. Prabhuji was asking, we have for spiritual knowledge, we have to have a bona fide spiritual master. That is essential if you want to progress in education.
Yes, Prabhu.
To comment on Mahatma's question, does reading of Vedas influence people? Vedas basically talk about Dharma, Dharma, Moksha.
Yeah. So what's the question? What's the question? Oh, your comment.
Comment.
Oh, it's a comment. Okay.
That's just commenting. That's pretty much where that's the way. But that's such a mean thing. Those people who are different about consciousness on different products.
Yeah, in
the... They teach basically also Dharma after Dharma. That's not what I used to.
Well, everything is there, but, you know, of course most of it is dharma, artha, kama and moksha. So even devotional service, love of God is also there. But in order to read the Vedas, in this day and age, it's just not practical to read them. There's so many Vedas. Most, as I said before, most of the Vedas are lost. They're not there. So many of the Vedic literature are either burned or they lost over a period of time. And whatever else is remaining, you know, they are all in very tough Sanskrit. They haven't even been translated. And there is no expert brahmanas and gurus to understand. So therefore, for us, the Srimad Bhagavatam is given, which is the essence, and Bhagavad Gita. So if you read Vedas, you won't make, it won't be, you won't get any benefit out of it. Oh, Prana Prabhu, yeah.
Ajurveda. So Ajurveda, they take minimum of 7 years to go through it. So, not even master, but just to go through it. And yeah, there are ashrams where they teach about Vedas, but it doesn't really mean the highest for human life. Human life is meant for devotional service. So that's what Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, actually it's interesting. I met someone a year ago. He said that his son is studying the Yajurveda in America. Yeah, for he told me the same thing. It takes 7 years to understand the Yajurveda. But even to understand the Vedas, one needs a bona fide spiritual master. So. Where is the bona fide spiritual master? You can't just go to an academic institution and learn the Vedas. You want, the import of the Vedas won't be revealed to you.
Okay.
Yeah. You just read that and distribute that. And then people will forget the other Vedas if you distribute more of this. Okay, Grantha, Srimad Bhagavatam, Shri Prabhupada.